Imagine growing up and being told you're a boy or a girl, but feeling very intensely, very early on, that something feels very strange about that label. And certainly, as children, we're all working out who we are, what being a girl or what being a boy actually means, and there's plenty of room for confusion. But for some, right from an early age, that becomes an unshakable feeling of being a stranger in one's own body. And that was certainly the experience for 21-year-old Madden.
I don't think that there's a single night in my life that I had gone to bed not hoping and dreaming that the next day I would wake up as male. As a four-year-old, like most four-year-olds, you know, kids just take things so easily. I remember turning to my friend after we were playing one day and just saying, oh, you know, I know we look the same now, but I'm actually going to grow up to be a boy. And she just kind of looked at me and was like, oh, okay, and just sort of took it like that, which, you know, most people will understand about kids. They're just sort of, you know, everything just rolls off their shoulder.
Madden, who at 21 has been making big decisions to fully occupy the skin he's in, and we'll hear more later about how Madden's family and peers responded as he did indeed grow up to become a boy. But first, a man who's worked with countless kids who experience these sorts of early feelings and with their families, child and adolescent psychiatrist Dr. Domenico Di Ceglia, founded the groundbreaking, sometimes controversial, Gender Identity Development Unit at the Tavistock and Portman NHS Foundation Trust over in North London. He visited Australia for the 2014 Freud Conference, and I caught up with him from his home in Rome. So it was a case of buongiorno, Domenico.
Buongiorno and good morning to you.
Lovely to have you with us. Let's go back to 1989. Why did you see a need for a specialist service for teens and children focused on gender identity problems?
Well, it came from a patient, a service user, somebody who came to the Tavistock Clinic. This was a teenager who had been raised as a girl, but was maintaining that she felt like a boy. I knew nothing about this area. We were in the years 83, 84. And so I took this young person in therapy to explore what was all this about. And so we worked together for a couple of years. And this teenager, because of the distress that this condition had created in him, or I should say now, had attempted suicide three times. Mm. He never attempted suicide again. And by the end of this 2 months or to 2 years of exploration, it became clear that he felt he was a boy, but also wondered why his parents had not realized what he felt and had, I suppose, done something earlier on in his life. And so that implanted in me the idea of a service for children with issues of this kind, and led gradually to the development of a service in South London originally, where I start to see children and teenagers with this type of issues.
Let's consider who you're working with now. What sorts of things are the children and teens saying about how they feel when they are referred to you? Can you give me some further examples just to get a sense of what you're describing as gender identity issues? And of course, for many years, psychiatrists called that gender identity disorder. Now, yeah, there's a tendency to call it gender dysmorphia. But
it's not dysmorphia, it's dysphoria.
Dysphoria, beg your pardon. What are kids and teens saying to you?
Well, the first thing to realize is that this is primarily an identity issue. Here is a child or a teenager who feels that he's in the wrong body, so that the internal perception of himself or herself does not coincide, is not in harmony with what the body says. And then if it is a child, of course, there will be manifestation, there will be behaviors which shows this sense, this profound sense of belonging to the other sex. So if it is a natal boy, as people now say, so a child who's been raised as a boy, but feels intensely that he's a girl, he will do things that, you know, girls tend to do. So he will play with stereotypically toys of girls. He will mix with girls during, you know, breaks at school. He will role play roles, you know, of girls. And the other way around, if this is a natal female who identify as a boy, will do things that, you know, boys tend to do. Will get involved in rough and tumble play, will want to join the boys group, and so on. So all these are manifestation of their sense of identity. That's why this condition doesn't sit well in the psychiatric classification, because it's primarily an identity issue, and so it's an issue of diversity.
Yes, indeed.
At the same time, one would need to say that because of this incongruence, there is distress, particularly during the periods of development. And that's why the condition, the accepted condition eventually was to call it gender dysphoria, because dysphoria means distress. And that is the key issue, I think, in trying to help these children.
It's a very difficult thing, though. Let's consider the work that you do with very young children. At what point do you make those behaviours a problem? What point do those sorts of behaviours cause concern? Perhaps it's at the point that the child is distressed. But when we're little, we're exploring all aspects of our gender identity, and we're experimenting and learning. Our lives are so fluid and formless. So at what point do you see a need to intervene?
Well, it's difficult to predict, you know, the outcome of these presentations. So we know from research and from follow-up study that if we look at children, say, of 5, 6, 7, or 8, who identify with the other gender and shows this type of behaviors, up to 27%, according to the studies, and there are differences in various studies, will persist or will continue with their cross-gender identification. The rest will not. And usually the time of change is before puberty or at the beginning of puberty, so between, say, 11 and 13. So that's the window where the change, if it has to occur, will occur. And so the rest of these children do not persist in their identification with the other gender.
I can imagine that parents come to you very confused.
Yes, there are all sorts of parents. There are all sorts of ways in which families and parents react to a child who presents himself or herself saying, look, I don't feel comfortable with the body I've got. Now, one also would need to say that there are a number of children who don't know exactly how they feel, and so they know that there is something that doesn't quite fit, but they are not clear that this is because their perception of gender is different from their body, and this becomes only clear at the beginning of puberty or at the beginning of adolescence or even later on. But for a vast majority of children, sometimes this is clear much earlier on, during early childhood.
Let's look at how you approach working with children and teens, and perhaps the approach is different for both.
Sure.
But in the past, people might have construed this feeling as a disorder, and would want to change the feeling, change that gender identity that a child is identifying with. So what are your therapeutic aims as a psychotherapist? Because these are interesting to me.
Yes, I became very aware very, very earlier on, I think, that these were very profound issues of identity in these children. And if one tried to change these children, they would feel terribly intruded, and they would not engage in any exploration. It became clear to me that what was important is to accept the gender identity of this child, how it was at the time. And this acceptance, I think, you know, would benefit these children and usually would make them feel much more comfortable. Having done that, then it became possible, I think, to explore all sorts of other issues. The other important issues at the time was also to reduce or eliminate the secrecy around this type of presentation, so that the child was allowed to talk openly with the parents, with their sibling, about his own or her own perception.
Very difficult though, isn't it? Because you're working in a therapeutic context, the family home is a private setting, but kids have to function and survive in the wider world and at school, so that secrecy must be a big part of that.
Yes, so that is of course, it becomes a process that if one creates openness within the family or the nuclear family, so with the parents and the siblings, then the question how you extend is to the extended family, to the grandparents. And sometimes in the past, I used to do family trees, for instance, starting from grandparents and then wondering, you know, who knew and who did not know. And if they knew, what the child or the family or the parents, what kind of reaction would they expect? So that they would become involved in a process of understanding and also empathizing, which that is also an important issue, with other people's perception. This means, I suppose, putting oneself in their shoes and see how would they react or what is the expected reaction. And that would gradually facilitate a process of openness and understanding. Then the issue, of course, would need to be, I suppose, faced with the school, with a much more complex environment. And so then with parental support, I think, a contact with the school could be made. And our service and the one or two therapists would support this process, going to meetings with the school staff, with their local GP, in trying to gather people together, in trying to get an understanding of the issues involved.
Mm. Let me just say, with me this morning on Life Matters here on RN is Dr. Domenico De Ceglia. He is the founder of a groundbreaking gender identity development unit, working with children and teenagers who identify as a gender that's different to the one that they occupy physically. And as you can imagine, it's difficult work. Let's enter that therapeutic space again, because I'm interested in the psychotherapy, the approaches that you adopt. So you've talked about developing a trust, developing an empathy, an acceptance. What do you then do?
Well, then I suppose the issue is to explore with the child his own or her own perception, either individually or within the family. And quite often, I think this will happen within the family context. Only in specific situation, I think we will see the child separately, but not without an initial, I suppose, reflection with the whole family. And then, of course, you know, we would deal with the issues as they arise and prepare the family to a number of possible outcomes, because one other therapeutic aim is to help the family to cope with a certain degree of uncertainty about what future will be for this child.
Well, what might be some of the outcomes that you're working towards?
Well, an outcome might be that the child will persist, will continue in his identification, and so when puberty starts, then may bring a number of issues, because the perception goes in one direction and grows in one direction while the body is growing in a different direction. And that might increase the distress, and so there would be then measures which could be taken at that point. Or alternatively, the child can change and start to feel differently. And so the parents would need then to readjust to this possible change. And I've had cases, for instance, I remember very clear, I had the case of a child who had been allowed to live as a girl because his feelings or her feelings were so intense before puberty. And so the parents allowed for this child, who was a natal boy, to live as a girl at the age of 8 or 9. And we continued to meet with the family who lived in another part of the country. And one day when the child was about 12 or 13, the mother, you know, rang me in a quite anxious state, wanting to speak to me, you know, immediately. And so when I got to the telephone, then the mother said, we need to change the appointment with the pediatric endocrinologist because now he wants to be a boy.
Right.
And so it came as a shock to her that this child who had lived now for 2 or 3 years or for a number of years as a girl, with the beginning of the puberty, had changed and started to feel differently. I was now saying, I am a boy.
So you can imagine that parents are listening to this conversation and wondering whether or not your work, this formalisation of this acceptance of how a child is feeling at odds with their gender, their physical gender, is kind of going to encourage them in a way and reinforce this feeling when it might have actually just moved on without this kind of whole therapeutic framework landing around the kid. And people would have concerns about that.
Well, I think what is important is for the child to feel accepted as he is or as she is at the time. Because in this particular case, for instance, you see, about a year after, because I continue to follow the case and continue the meetings for at some intervals, and meeting, of course, with the school, and also some professional had been involved with this case in another town, you know, far from London. And so I did put during one of these meetings to this child, I said, were your parents wrong in allowing you to live as a girl for a period of time? And this, he had no doubt, and he said, no, that was not wrong, because that's how I felt at the time. And so this showed clearly that this child had been able to shift, to move, in spite of the fact that he'd been living in the role which he felt, you know, was a manifestation of his identity.
But clearly, the end point in some cases, and you alluded to it earlier, is to work with an endocrinologist, and that might involve, as a child hits puberty, blocking those hormones during puberty. This is a very serious decision to take on the behalf of a young person, effectively a child. How do you view that decision to then physically facilitate this child's feelings?
Well, that is, obviously, as you say, is a very serious decision. And so that's why it needs quite a lot of exploration and preparation before one gets into that pathway.
At what point do you say, though, a hormonal intervention is appropriate? At what basis do you make that decision?
Well, the decision is usually made on the basis that the gender dysphoria, that this perception has started very early on in childhood and has persisted through all childhood, that the dysphoria, the distress, instead of decreasing with puberty, has increased. So the incongruence between the mind and the body has become more intense and has led to an increase in distress. Then there is a certain degree of emotional stability in the child, and of course there is support of the parents. And all these elements have to be considered, as well as a number of physical tests which the endocrinologist will make.
Because it's tricky, isn't it? Because during our teens, Domenico, we're distressed often. We're emotionally volatile. It's a part of the experience of being a teenager. So it must be a very particular kind of distress that you're looking to.
Well, this is a distress about the body, which sometimes, of course, without support will lead to suicidal attempts. And in fact, there is an increase of suicidal attempts during this period. And so our data and our surveys which we have collected shows that while there is very low suicidal rates or suicidal attempts or self-harming earlier, you know, during early childhood, with puberty, there is an increase of the risk of self-harming if there is not enough support provided in these children. And that's how sometimes, in fact, the first case I saw, I was mentioning, in fact, that attempt suicide 3 times because no one could understand or no one could help this particular teenager until got to that time was a general adolescent department.
Yes.
And not a specific service.
Yes, that would be very distressing. As a psychiatrist, working with young people over many years now, you understand that the research in this field is limited, but do you feel any closer to understanding the triggers for or the causes of gender identity problems early in life? I guess we can look to a range of contributing factors, both within the child themselves, their biology, but also within the child's life and their relationships.
Sure. And obviously, you know, there are a combination, I think, as far as we know, of factors. And no single factor has been identified as the cause of this type of issues or presentation. And I doubt that it will ever be found, I think, because we are talking here about, I suppose, a binary view, I think. Well, in fact, the reality is that there are so many in between these days, between these two polarities. And so we have to follow this and support these teenagers to find where is their location in terms of identity, which sometimes can be in between being male or female.
Look, I thank you for joining us on Life Matters from Rome, beautiful Rome, this morning. Dr. Domenico De Celia, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Child and adolescent psychiatrist Dr. Domenico De Celia, founder of a leading gender identity development unit based in the UK, speaking to us from Rome, of course, though, and he was on the line ahead of his trip to Australia as the keynote speaker at the 2014 Freud Conference on Life Matters. You're on RN Summer, and we heard from Domenico there about the therapeutic approach he takes. Let's next hear on Life Matters from 21-year-old Madden with his first-hand experience. It's coming up in a tick.